Away from your radio? Listen to 1010XL on the 1010XL app, a free download for all smartphone users, or say, Alexa, open 1010XL.
Final seconds playing out. End of a fabulous tournament. Rebound into the hands of Hunter. And Virginia with the all-time turnaround title.
Let's go into the night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Well said, Jim Nantz, from the outhouse to the penthouse. Worth it, isn't it? 388 days worth. Memories of bowing out a year ago. How can we forget? How can we possibly forget? UMBC, a 16 seed over a number one seed. I mean, that would never happen. That could possibly, there's no way that could ever happen. That would be like a lady being president of the United States of America. We just could never see anything like that. That would be like Rosie O'Donnell actually using a fork and a spoon when she sits down for a feed. I mean, there's just no way a 16 seed is going to knock off a number one seed. Yet we saw it. A year later, enter Garner Webb, a 14-point lead over number one Virginia. They find their way through. They win six straight. They get it done in overtime. 85-77, Virginia knocks off Texas Tech in the Atlantic Coast Conference, really on top of the world now after the double billing, winning it in football and now winning it in basketball. Is it worth it? I mean, I ask all the time as we roll into the night about the Braves and the Marlins and this equation that we've gone over really for years. The Braves won 14 consecutive divisional titles. They were competitive during the long run through the spring, summer, and into the fall. 14 years for those fans. Competitiveness, being involved in each and every game, five, six nights a week, but only one title. And then you go way, way down the road south of here, and you look at the then Florida Marlins winning two titles, but being a dumpster fire in between them. And, you know, I've asked many times over the years, what would you rather do? What would you rather be? A team that wins two titles, but they're absolutely, you know, not irrelevant in between those two great runs, or a team like the Atlanta Braves, where each and every year you had a chance, even though you were only able to win it once. It's really a six-pack, maybe even a 12-pack at minimum conversation, but it's something that you can drink on tonight, or perhaps chew on tonight. Now you bring up Virginia. Would you take it now? The misery, the pain of losing to UMBC the way that Virginia did a year ago, to really become the laughingstock of the college basketball world. You'll always be the answer to a trivia question. This national title will be sweet, but people will forget. You'll kind of fall into the category of, I don't know, maybe Villanova winning it. How many people actually remember that? You know, I mean, we remember the one in 85 when they had that incredible run when they knocked off Georgetown, where they could not miss on that particular night from the field. But do you remember their recent title? Virginia will fall, I believe, into a situation like that where you kind of look back upon it. And I think most will remember them bowing out to a 16 seed than they actually will remembering them win the national championship. So, you know, I'll ask you tonight, and you can get me on Twitter, Ballew1010XL, or hit me on the text line, 641-1010. Is it all worth it now for Virginia to lose the way they did a year ago, considering they were able to put it together and get it done in overtime on this Monday night? Honestly, I think it is. The answer to my first question, I'd rather be a Brave than a Marlin. I'd rather be competitive every year and win divisional titles and go into the playoffs and have a shot every year, even though you only took it home once in 14 years, than be the Marlins who won it twice in a similar time period, but again, weren't able to really do anything of any significant success in between those two World Series. Just my opinion, as always here on Into the Night with Rick Ballew. I certainly do value your opinion. All right, we got a lot to get into. I got to do it again. Don't want to, didn't plan on it, but I honestly feel as though it needs to be mentioned. To me, last night's victory for Virginia is a great one for Tony Bennett. It's a phenomenal one for their program, but I think we witnessed the Minneapolis screw job. There were four enormous calls down the stretch that went the way of Virginia. And outside of Miles Jack not being down, I almost never complain about officiating. I try to do the best that I can about being as neutral as possible. And, I remember some Florida State fans were really pissed at me a few years ago when I didn't come to the total defense of the Dalvin Cook situation where a clip was called and Jimbo got a 15-yard penalty. And, if that didn't happen, they could have knocked off Clemson. You never want to do it if it's a team that you root for because you just really sound like a baby. And with the Miles Jack wasn't down, I didn't care about that. I didn't care about what people said about that. I mean, that was a blatant miss, and it kept the Jaguars out of the Super Bowl. And I'm not one of those get-over-it type of guys. I will always complain about that, and I honestly don't care what you think about it. If there's ever an opportunity for me to complain about Miles Jack and that call, I will for the remainder of my life. That is never going to go away from me. But last night, Texas Tech and Virginia, the GF went to Texas Tech for a couple of years. And then she went to Oklahoma where she graduated. I've talked about watching Texas Tech football forever, okay? This is a nice Texas Tech basketball team. I predicted them to get to the Final Four. They were screwed last night. They were absolutely robbed. And it's just so horrible. And I'm not going to go to the most obvious call that everyone is discussing today about when the ball was knocked out of bounds and it did really graze off his finger. What about the offensive foul on Jarrett Culver, who's the best player on the court, although DeAndre Hunter may feel as though he was that guy last night for Virginia. But an offensive foul that late in the second half on Culver where a defensive player was clearly moving. Terrible call. Jim Nance asked, and, Jim Nance isn't the analyst. He's got two, one to his left, one to his right, Raftery and Grant Hill, yet they still went to the official because Grant, you could tell that Jim Nance was like, wait a minute, you really going to call an offensive foul in that situation? And they did. I have this on my timeline right now on Twitter. If you're at in listening in the car, don't do it while you're driving. Do like everyone else and wait till you at least get to a red light. But pull up my timeline at Ballew1010XL. Someone else posted it, and I retweeted it. Kyle Guy last night, this is one of the most outrageous fouls that I have seen in a very, very long time. It's a three-point game. And I'm looking at it right now. Go to Twitter. Kyle Guy literally here trips over his own player and the officials call a foul on Texas Tech. They're not even close to Kyle Guy. So that's three huge calls right there on the surface. And again, I know when you come on here and you start complaining about the refs and complaining about the umpires and complaining about the officials, it makes you sound like a whiner, makes you sound like a baby. But when you do it, when you honestly don't really have a dog in the fight, doesn't that lend a little bit more credence to it? I mean, the fact that the GF went there for a couple of years, all right, I was leaning towards the Red Raiders. But I didn't lose any winks of sleep over this. I got enough things to stress out about. For instance, the Red Sox are freaking 3-9. They hung out rings today in the most anticlimactic ring ceremony I have ever seen. They were so, taken back by it. Before you knew it, it was 5-2 Toronto. This is a Toronto team. Quick, can anyone out there tell me two players on this year's Toronto Blue Jays baseball team? or the manager while you're at it. They went into Boston today and beat their brains out. So I got my own problems. But I just hate that here it is, another significant game. And if you go back to last night's show, okay, I did not have a problem with a foul that was called at the end of the game between Auburn and Virginia. I thought that that was the correct call. Now, obviously, the missed double dribble was a major gaffe, and it was a mistake that should not have happened. But my point is we keep on getting ready to get to a season in the anticipation of whether or not your team is going to make a run or not. We are literally, right in front of our eyes, seeing trips to the title and the title game itself being affected by calls that are either being made or not being made. And we just saw it in the NFL, and we saw it in the Final Four, and we saw it last night in the national championship in college basketball. And you know what? I don't have an answer for you. I don't know what I can begin to tell you how to fix this problem. The turnover of that ball getting knocked out of bounds is just a disgrace. And even if you slow it down and it shows that his pinky was, come on. We've seen a play like that 10 million times before. That's Texas Tech's basketball. You know that. I know that. Well, so let's not even waste our time on that issue. Go to my timeline and look at this foul on Guy. And seriously, there's good basketball people out there. Tell me how you can call a foul on Texas Tech on this play. And go back to the great play by Culver, who's the best player on the court. And you called an offensive foul on him. So, we've had the infamous Montreal screw job where, what was it, Bret Hart was a loser to Shawn Michaels. Vince McMahon was there to see it. Bret Hart spit in his face as he became a turncoat and left McMahon's stable and went elsewhere. I think last night, in my opinion, this situation in Minneapolis was just as bad. And you know what? You're never going to get the recognition for it because the game ended up being 85-77, even though it was played in overtime. You're only going to hear complaints if it comes down to one possession or if it comes down to being 1 or 2 points. As a matter of fact, there's still many more coming out of Auburn or many more coming out nationally what happened in the Auburn situation against Virginia than what happened last night with Texas Tech against Virginia. And I don't know why that is. Maybe it is the final score. I'm just trying to be as honest as I can. That's the way I saw it. It is disappointing. Virginia wins it. Congratulations. What they've been able to do now, considering what happened to them a year ago, is simply phenomenal. But boy, man, I just want to watch these games and have the officials not so deeply affect the outcome of what is a championship and a second-place finish. I mean, it's really scary. Remember years and years and years ago, the major controversy between Dallas and Buffalo on Lord Stanley's ice for the cup and how big of a deal that was going back some 20 years ago. And I remember at that particular point looking at it saying, wow. Either way they go with that call, it's going to end up being wrong. It's not going to end up being right. It's going to end up being wrong. It was one of those deals. That particular point in football and baseball and basketball, I thought for the most part they had it right. You know, it does make you wonder a little bit that where we have so much technology and that human error is always going to be a factor. Did you maybe like it the way it once was? Calls made, tough, deal with it, instead of always taking it to the review, looking at the advanced technology, and then again, it seems like they're getting a lot of these calls wrong. Anyway, in football, obviously they didn't make it. That'll be viewed this year on an experimental type basis, and we'll see what happens now in college basketball. Chris Beard, Texas Tech's got a lot to be proud of. But again, there's no guarantee they're going to be right back in that thing next year, especially with Culver, you know, possibly being a lottery pick. All right, lots to do as we look at college basketball. We'll now put that in the rearview mirror. Last night's game, you know, starts us on what is simply a phenomenal week in sports. This is one of the greatest weeks of sports, non-football related, of the year. And last night's game was a thriller. I thought this year's tournament was just spectacular. And, you know, I'm always looking for trends. I'm always looking for ways to make the game better. Did we get a new message this past season that said the one and dones aren't necessarily the way to go? That building your brand, putting together your team. I hate that these calls were made because I feel as though Virginia needs a little bit more love. And I'm sure they're getting it today in Charlottesville. But I wanted a clean victory for the Cavaliers. And I'm not going to go as far as to say that this thing is tainted. Just because I have this opinion doesn't mean it's going to really affect anything when it comes to giving them the trophy. And when it comes to them being looked back upon as being the champion. But it's filthy. It really is. I mean, they missed so many calls last night. One-sided calls. And I heard from Auburn fans. And I told you, I kind of laughed at them. Because of the embarrassment they made out of themselves in Toomer's Corner. They left before the final gun went off. I feel really bad for Texas Tech last night. Because they got robbed on multiple occasions. You know, what if that foul had been called on Zion Williamson? Jarrett Culver was like one of the great players in college basketball that I think people still really don't know anything about. And this guy led the team in points. He led the team in assists. He led the team in rebounds. And with the game on the line, he took it to the rack for an unbelievable offensive move. With a moving defensive player. And they brought on the ref. What's his name again? Senator. What's his name?
Joe Stetator, right?
Yeah, something like that. He's like, no, Jim, that was a great call. I'm like, wait a minute. That was a great call? He was sliding, and he turned like nearly 180 degrees. He took his right shoulder as he had his back to the hoop. And he completely turned it at least 90 degrees. At least 90. And I'm thinking 180. I mean, it's like he almost turned around where he was on his back. Offensive foul on Culver? Lottery pick? Player of the year in the Big 12? Offensive foul? That late in the game? Boy. I would have loved to have seen the reaction today by the sports media if that had been called on Zion Williamson. But I'm not hearing a peep today that was called on Culver. Anyway, different rules for different people. We've always done that, especially in basketball. I mean, there's always been those rules that have applied in this game, which unfortunately is a very individual game. Holy smokes, did I overrun this this landing tonight. I didn't have the clock with me. I didn't realize I was that long-winded. Let me get to a quick break. Let me do that. I'm going to grab some of your feedback on this. Let's do that. Let's start with hoops. Much more to get into. Glad you're with us on a Tuesday night edition. This is Into the Night with Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, tonight's show brought to you by Remedy, some incredible jobs that they have available for you right now. Order processing representatives for a medical devices company. All right. Need to have great customer service, computer skills, $15 an hour. Apply online. Just go to remedystaff.com. And again, they have great jobs all throughout Jacksonville, full and part time. Try the new app, at Remedy Staff or apply online. Go to remedystaff.com. All right. I do want to get some reaction from you on this at 641-1010. Last thing I wanted to do was come in here tonight and talk about blown calls by the officials. That's not what I want to do. But if a game of this magnitude is affected by bad calls where it determines a winner from a loser, I think it's irresponsible to ignore it. Awful calls against Texas Tech last night. Three of them down the stretch. At least that's my opinion. And I have the video to back it up. If you want to voice yours, you can. 641-1010. That is the phone number. Let's kick things off by going to... let's go to Jonathan. He leads us off here into the night with Rick Ballew. Welcome.
Hey, Rick. How you doing, man?
Good.
Good. Excuse me. I just wanted to bring something up that you said earlier about nobody possibly remembering the championship from this year and instead focusing on losing to the 16-seed UMBC last year. I'm a pretty casual basketball fan. Obviously, things really start to heat up for me during March Madness, but I'll tell you what, I'm definitely going to remember them kind of in duality because I feel like they kind of go hand in hand because, you know, for them to lose to a 16-seed like they did last year and then come back to win the Natty, bad calls or not, don't really want to get into that. But for them to do that, I think is kind of going to be all thrown into one story. So just wanted to hear your thoughts on that, and I'll take my comments off the air. Have a good night.
Yeah, you know, that makes sense. The fact that, you know, they did do it the very next year is one that I'll remember. I'm trying to compare it to, you know, other championships that we have seen. I don't know if I can right now. Certainly not in college basketball. I mean, honestly out there, be honest with yourself. How many people remember that Villanova won the national championship a year ago? Or that Villanova won the national championship 4 years ago? I think we're accustomed right now to thinking about North Carolina and Duke and certainly Kentucky, even though Kentucky's only won it once in a 10-year period with John Calipari. Do you remember that UConn won it after Coach Calhoun left? Remember Kevin Ollie won it with UConn when they knocked off Kentucky?
That was the same year Florida made the Final Four, too.
Yeah. And people around here are going to remember the Gators winning it in consecutive years. But look at the Blue Bloods after Florida. And don't kid yourself. Under Jim Calhoun, Connecticut was a blue blood. They won the national title in 99. They won the national title in 04. They won the national title in 2011. They won the national title after he exited and came back and won it in 2014. And they also got knocked out in some huge battles to the University of Connecticut. Elite Eight, Final Four, what have you. So, yeah, I do agree with you there. I think the fact that the way that they lost and they came back and they won. There's a lot of things that I remember. I remember the big red machine of 75 beating the Red Sox in maybe the greatest World Series of all time. But I also remember them in 76 sweeping the Yankees. That was when the Yankees started to piece together huge money for free agent. And if you did forget, because a lot of people do, Reggie Jackson actually spent a year in Baltimore in 1976 when Charlie Finley had that huge fire sale and he said goodbye to Vida Blue and Jim Hunter and Raleigh Fingers and Gene Tennis and Sal Bando and Mike North and Reggie Jackson, Bill North, excuse me, Mike North, the guy I used to work with in Chicago. And the list went on and on and on and on. All those great players. Reggie spent a year in 76. Well, they made the deal and got him over in 77. What happened in 1977? The Yankees won the World Series. Then 78, of course, they did it again when many people thought the Red Sox were the best team. That's the Bucky Dent home run. They blew that huge lead. But you remember, so I remember a loss there to a win there. But that was a loss by the Yankees in 76, where they were swept by the big red machine, four straight. Then they made some moves, including getting Reggie Jackson. And then if you remember in 78, even though Sparky Lyle was like the fireman of the year, they went out and they got Goose Gossage. So freaking crazy the Yankees were back then. They had arguably the best closer in baseball. And then they went out and got the Goose. If you've never read The Bronx Zoo, you need to. It's a baseball Bible. It's one of the greatest baseball books ever written, and it's on the 1978 New York Yankees, written by Sparky Lyle. Let's grab some more phone calls. 641-1010. Let's go to Jeff. He is next. Into the Night with Rick Ballew. Welcome.
I think you're right. I take your opinion because I didn't watch any of the game last night. I don't think you're a crybaby if you complain about the call because, you know, it didn't feel right probably and stuff. And just want to answer your question. Rocky Balboa is a Toronto Blue Jay, and the pitcher today was Matt Shoemaker. And one of their position players is Brandon Rue.
Thank you, Jeff. Shoemaker was pretty good today. Got in a little bit of trouble in the sixth, I believe. I don't know how I feel about that right now. LeVay, am I becoming a little bit passive here in my older age? I mean, the Sox are 3-9, right? And typically a 3-9 Red Sox beginning would just ruin my days. I mean, I would be in such a bad mood. But is it safe to say that maybe I have softened up the fact that they just won the World Series again this past year, and they've won it four times in 14 years, has a lot to do with why I am not upset. Is that a good move, bad move? Am I getting weaker as I'm getting older? Please take me through this.
I wouldn't say you're necessarily getting weaker. I would say, though, if my team just won the Natty and the whole thing in the World Series, for example, with the Red Sox last year, I wouldn't be too mad if they got two bad stars. So, I mean, if your team just comes off of a championship like that, you can't be too mad.
Yeah, as I said a little bit earlier, it was one of the most anticlimactic ring ceremonies I have ever seen. They brought out all the, you know, former greats, Manny Ramirez, David Ortiz, you know, you name them. Kurt Schilling was there today. Michael Lowe. I mean, I think I saw them all. I didn't see Veritek there. And they had a lot of current Patriots there. Gronk came out. Julian Edelman came out with a big dip in. Yet, you know what the Boston media was talking about? How come Tom Brady's not here? How come Bill Belichick's not here? How come Robert Kraft's not here?
I've never been to a jail.
The brilliant Boston media can't figure out why Bob Kraft wasn't there today. He was getting a massage. Of course, that's why. He didn't have time for that. Man, dude, he's taking low profile. Bill Belichick's 2 weeks away from the draft. He's doing his scouting. He's prepping. The guy's got 12 draft picks, including three in the third round. Brady's doing some other thing, but it's just amazing how that media is. If I ever irritate you out there, it's because that's where I'm from. Here they are celebrating a world championship, and they're complaining that Brady, Belichick, and Kraft are not at Fenway Park for the ring ceremony, which is really kind of scary to me for this reason and this reason only. Boston's always been a baseball town. Mad Dog Russo recently said that Boston has turned into a football town, and it really pissed me off because I used to go with my dad and his buddies where there'd be 30,000 fans for those Patriot games, and it's not a football town. I also grew up during the Doug Flutie years where he was winning the Heisman Trophy and throwing 60-yard passes to beat Miami, and it'd be on page 7 of the Boston Globe. They didn't care. We played high school football Saturday at noon. Boston has never been a football town. But all of a sudden, I'm wondering, wait a minute. Is the Mad Dog on to something here by saying that now Boston is a football town? And I listen to that media probably more than I should. But they're pretty intelligent. They're pretty good at what they do. But they're all flipping out about the fact that three Patriots are not there. This is the Red Sox. I don't know. Times are a-changing. Whoever made that quote was brilliant. All right, we got much more to get into. Let's turn our attention to the Jaguars. The schedule is out. It's enticing. There's a lot of possibility there for dual practices, which are very important. But it just kind of keeps it running through the arteries and the veins. We knew about Baltimore. The three other opponents were announced. If you have not heard, well, we'll take a look at that next. That is Into the Night with Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, a little bit of breaking news out of God's country. Cabanguele has announced that he is going pro. About a couple of years left. Says he's done all he can do at FSU. So they'll lose five seniors and feet. Cabanguele. I don't know what he went by short. Great player. I mean, off the bench. Has there been a guy outside of Sammy Cassell who didn't love to shoot the way that Cabanguele does? And, I mean, he's kind of a tweener. You know, I got to believe he's going to be a power forward at the next level, but he's athletically gifted. Now, remember, the new rule is in where you can fill out the papers and say that you want to, you know, make yourself available for the NBA draft. And then you have a certain amount of time to take your name back in if you elect to not go and then return to school. But word tonight out of Tallahassee is that Cabanguele is gone after a very good year. So that'll be a learning process again for the Noles. They're going to lose five seniors, and they're going to lose Cabanguele. So that'll be their top six players, you know, for the most part. I mean, there's some others that are returning that are pretty good, like Forrest. And we did see some younger guys play later in the year. But, he did it a couple of years ago when he lost Bacon and Isaac and Beasley and Theron Mays' kid, Xavier Mays. So we'll see what happens there. But this is the latest coming in a couple of moments ago. All right, let's get to the Jags. The four-game schedule was announced for the preseason today. I love days like this. It's just, you know, a little bit of something to look forward to. I'm not one of those that will ever play the role of, oh, I can't wait for it to get here. I can wait for it to get here. I absolutely can. I'm loving March Madness. I'm loving the beginning of baseball. I'm loving the fact that the Stanley Cup playoffs actually begin tomorrow night. And then again on Thursday night, I'm loving the fact that LeVay is growing a beard, a playoff beard, now during hockey season.
It's coming in pretty slow, though.
Yeah. I see the mayor has got it growing, and he's going to join us next week. Greg Huntington, by the way, in the studio tomorrow night, he's got a great event coming up that involves a ton of ex-Jags, including ours, our own Leon Searcy, among others. Big event coming up right around the corner. So Huntington's going to come in tomorrow night to talk about that a little bit and just go through some Jaguar football, which is always a lot of fun. But first week, and this came out, you know, recently. This came out during the NFL's owners' meetings that the Jaguars would practice with the Baltimore Ravens for a week. Now, there have been no official announcement about this, and as of right now, it still has not been confirmed. What we can tell you is that the Jaguars will open up in Baltimore somewhere between April 8th and April 12th. And I think the feeling is that the game will be played on the 12th and that the Jaguars will practice those other days. But again, no official confirmation. Philadelphia here a week later. Nick Foles against the Philadelphia Eagles for the home opener, preseason-wise. Still, it feels pretty good, doesn't it? That'll be the 15th through the 19th. I know there's a lot of speculation that the Jaguars will practice here against the Eagles. Nothing has been confirmed. Remember, last year they were in Minneapolis. They practiced against the Vikings for a few days before that preseason game. 2 years ago, they did it twice. They had a couple of days here with the Bucks before a home game. Earlier in training camp, they went to Foxborough and practiced with the Patriots for a couple of days before taking on New England. So, again, nothing is official, but I think, you know, you can certainly consider that there's a real good chance that that could happen. At Miami on the 22nd, which is a Thursday night, that has already been announced. That's an 8 o'clock game. And then the wrap up the preseason, August 29th against the Atlanta Falcons right here in Jacksonville. So very, very short trips, trips to Miami, trips to Baltimore, Philadelphia coming here, Atlanta coming here, and we'll see what happens as far as an opportunity to possibly practice Jacksonville with those opponents. So that was announced today, and that is certainly a good thing. I think practicing against someone else, first of all, from the media's point of view, you can learn a whole heck of a lot more. Now, I know they don't care what the media thinks. They're trying to get better as a football team. I've always felt that the toughest thing to do when you are allowed to watch practice and you are in training camp is to determine how good these players are. And it's so difficult when they're going up against one another on a daily basis. Because obviously they're going to look good. They're professional football players. But you get a much better feel about how things are when you're going up against other professional football players. And even though it is controlled chaos, because you're talking about 180 guys out there, and certainly there are guys who aren't dressed, there are guys who are injured, there are guys who get days off. But still, it's an enormous operation. Just think about 180 players on a practice field, you know, trying to put these things together in that incredible heat in the month of August. But you get a much better feel with the eye test when you watch them go head-to-head against the Minnesota Vikings or against the Tampa Bay Buccaneers than you do if they're just working against one another. And I'm as much to blame with that as anyone. I can think of years where I've come back here and said, boy, Blaine Gabbert looked great today. And again, Blaine Gabbert always looked good in training camp. And other times I would come back here and say, boy, Blake Bortles looked really bad today. He can't throw a spiral. I remember when I did that in his first camp, people started hammering me. Well, Blue must be drinking. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Blake, but I'm like, bro, he throws like the ugliest ball I've ever seen. And again, I was a huge Blake Bortles fan. Probably his biggest supporter here in town. Or if not, at least certainly on one hand as one of them. But he didn't. He threw a terrible ball. Point I'm just trying to make is that it's a lot easier to see what's good and what's bad when you're on that practice field. You remember the tone 2 years ago, long before they made that run to the AFC Championship game? Do you remember how bad they looked when they got out there against the New England Patriots and people were saying that Garoppolo should be the quarterback and Brandon Albert was AWOL and they plugged in Cam Robinson and it was 10, 12, 14 players that looked better in New England than they did in Jacksonville. And the Jaguars had a lot of defensive injuries at that point, particularly in the secondary. So you do learn a lot, but you don't learn everything. I just love it. I'm just trying to sell you on the fact that I think there's a lot more room for team growth if you are able to practice against NFL opponents. And let's hope that's the case here against both the Eagles in Jacksonville and then the week prior to that against the Ravens when they do get things opened as far as against one another and the regular practice weeks begin with that first preseason game being in very early August. So I don't know what, you know, if that's when it is, I got to imagine that training camp will probably open up last couple of days of July, something like that. So, and we still got tons of time. Here we are 2 weeks and 2 days from the NFL draft. You'll have a rookie mini camp after the draft. Monday will officially be the start of OTAs. That'll be an interesting day. I think a lot of Jaguar fans right now are wondering about Jalen Ramsey and wondering about Leonard Fournette. I happen to be one of those guys that wants everyone there. I want 100% participation for several reasons. But if Jalen's going to miss it, I'm all right with it. He's a superstar. He's going to work out at home. He's got a baby. He's going to work out at his dad in that complex. Again, I'd rather have him here. But I'm not going to make a huge deal about Jalen Ramsey missing camp. Leonard Fournette misses camp? Boy, that's bad. That's not good. He's got to be here. I mean, he simply does. They've extended the olive branch. They've made some changes to benefit him. I really hope that he shows up and tries to become a leader, and even more than that, just become a good teammate again. The lasting impression of Leonard Fournette is him sitting on the bench with Yeldon, being anything but. Jalen Ramsey didn't miss a snap. And he was less than 100% at times last year. He plays every single game. So I know that that's going to be the conversation piece all Monday. And I hope it's 100%. But I just want to forewarn you as far as my opinion. And listen, it's only my opinion. I'll allow yours. But if you disagree with me, it will be the wrong opinion. Leonard Fournette missing camp will be a bad thing early on. He's got to be here. And I hope he is. So we have all that coming up next week. That's going to be a great week. And, you know, hey, listen, that starts on Monday. And then you're less than 2 weeks away from the draft. You got minicamp. And then you got, what, the start of, you know, minicamps and stuff like that. I believe it's May 21st. Heck, it's already April 9th here. It's unbelievable. Sit back and relax. Time is absolutely flying by. All right, we got much more to get into in our second hour coming up. I have yet to talk about Florida State spring practice. We were way too busy a night ago. I did not get to do that. And absolutely tonight, I need to start to talk about the Masters because it's here. And I was glued in front of the television set today, probably giving it 3 to 4 hours. The Golf Channel is just awesome. I mean, if you don't work, or if you're lucky enough to be someone like me where your work is to watch sports, the Golf Channel is absolutely phenomenal. And I loved it today. I was on it all day. Yeah, I was watching the Red Sox as well. But I was you know, I do have several TVs in my house. Something put together the sports bar. I know people keep asking me. I just haven't had a chance to put it together yet. I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe I'll hire someone to do it. Just don't feel like doing it. I feel like I need to make some changes in my life. And one of them is the sports bar. I don't know what I'm going to do. It's a big issue for me. It's like a midlife crisis. But the Masters is here. Par 3 contest coming up tomorrow. 87 guys will get after it. The 83rd Masters. Tiger spoke today. Phil spoke today. Rory spoke today. I have all of that coming up. We'll get into that in about 20 minutes. But coming up next, let's talk about the Florida State spring game. That was played over this past weekend. I have some thoughts on that coming up right here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, much like you, I'm really bummed out the Stones aren't coming, but Mick's got to get healthy. I mean, is what? Is his wife's younger than his daughter, right? You got to be young for her. Good luck, Mick. Didn't it happen last Friday, the surgery? I didn't even check in on that, but he's in good shape. He certainly has not eaten much over the years, and he always stays in relatively good shape. Very athletic. Great entertainer. And hopefully they do come back here at some point. You got to believe if they are, it would have to be in the middle of the summer, because before you know it, football will be here. Just went through that schedule beginning in August. All right, the Noles wrapped up spring ball. The Gators will do the same this weekend. Talk about them later in the week and then certainly next week. Didn't have a chance to mention Florida State last night for obvious reasons with everything else that was going on, including the national championship game. You know, I just kind of went through a little bit of a conversation about how hard I think it is to really tell what's good and what's not good in the NFL, and the same applies in college when you're practicing against yourself. One thing looks good, then you question the other, and that's kind of the way I came out of spring ball. I was able to get it on that whatever ESPN app was out there and was available on Saturday afternoon. And honestly, it was better than I expected. But here's what scared me. And I never thought I would say this, but I got out of there almost more concerned with the defense than I did with the offense. And that's why I'm being a little bit hesitant here, and I'm like, to slow down a bit. First of all, they didn't run. It was a glorified scrimmage where they passed it to like a 2-to-1 ratio. Both teams pass it, I'm guessing, somewhere in the mid-40s and ran it about half that. So, you know, if you're wondering about LeBourne and his injury and Cam Akers, and I know he scored, and Anthony Grant, guys, like, I think what Willie Taggart is thinking right now is we feel good about our backs. The offensive line looked better. James Blackman said his only sack was his fault. Now, you can also make the case that with the transfer coming over, Ryan Roberts, and with two guys being injured in Dickerson and Minshew, that they were without three starters. But I also think it's fair to say Dickerson's always hurt. So can you really rely on him? Minshew, same deal. The ultimate hot tub guy. I'd love to be able to sit here today and say, oh, Dickerson and Minshew will both be there for 12-plus games this year. That'd be a bald-faced lie. They haven't proven it before. There's really no reason to believe that that will be the case this year. Ryan Roberts, I don't know much about. I know he's a transfer. He's coming in, what, Northern Illinois? You know, I've heard some rumblings that they're a little bit meaner. The new style now with Clements is a little bit nastier, and that he's, you know, the Greg Fry experience didn't go all that well. Obviously, it didn't go well. They won 5 games. I think James Blackman's put on some weight. I think he looks real good. He's a team leader. I think this has a chance to be a great wide receiving core at Florida State. I mean, really special at FSU. Matthews apparently out of the doghouse. Helton was all over the place. Gavin was hanging on to the ball, and I know some have already given up on him. Terry's a future NFL guy. Speed, size, and the ability to hang on. And a couple of these younger wide receivers as well. This could be one of the great cores they've had over there in a long, long time. Hopefully the route package is improved. It was terrible under Lawrence Dossey, and it wasn't all his fault. The now ex Florida State wide receiver coach. They brought back another one of their favorite sons, this time Tallahassee's own Ron Dugans, who worked with Willie at South Florida, spent the last couple of years with the U, but he's a Tallahassee kid. He's back home. I thought the routes last year were just terrible. The offense in general was terrible under Walt Bell. I'd like to sit here and tell you that Willie Taggart feels more comfortable with his new offensive coaches. And I know that that's the theme that's coming out of Tallahassee. I've read that several different places. Want to believe that. Couldn't tell by watching the scrimmage. Had several FSU writers on. They've all been pretty consistent in that particular comment that the eye test and the ear test says that, yeah, that is the case. We'll see. I think one of the major problems a year ago is that the offensive game plan was just terrible. The wide receiver routes were at times way too long. The game plan at times was too much east to west, throwing the ball behind the backfield to wide receiver. I mean, just, I don't need to go over it again. So I'm hoping better routes, better route trees is the word I'm looking for. Offensive line, we just don't know. You know? We just don't know at this particular point. You know, defensively, they really like these two freshmen. I mean, I think you can look at two guys right now with McCray and with Dent, a linebacker and a defensive back respectively, and say they are going to play as true freshmen. I'm a little concerned about the push off the edge. We've heard that forever. And Florida State's always been able to get a push, even in those last couple of down years, not as great as it has been, to, let's say, going back to DeMarcus Walker a couple of years back. But they really didn't get as much of a push last year. And the end result of that was, well, the secondary wasn't as good. And there were times during the scrimmage on Saturday as I just was bragging about the wide receiving core, I thought that the defensive backfield was a little bit suspect. But again, I think you have to take into consideration that it was a glorified scrimmage and that the offense is making strides. I think there's a ton of talent in this secondary. But if they don't get any push, that's going to be a problem. The linebacking core can only improve. Last year's linebacking core was about as bad as I've ever seen at FSU. It was just terrible. There's no other way to say it. Slow and friendly and out of position. This year, talking about, you know, different concepts and 3-4 principles and things along those lines, when I first heard that, it scared me only because why would you go to four linebackers if it was your weakest position on the defensive side? Maybe they believe it's not weak. Maybe they believe it can get a little bit better. We'll see. You know, Tyler's back. Aguayo's back. Special teams should be okay. I don't, you know, Logan Tyler's been fairly consistent, perhaps overused. Aguayo, I don't know. Where's your faith right now on him? Boy, is there ever, I mean, his brother couldn't miss. To me, that's one of the major mysteries of what happened there with Aguayo. And, you know, the younger kid as well has had some moments at Florida State. I'll be honest with you right now. I don't have a ton of faith in him if the game is on the line. And maybe this is a year where it comes down to that. I mean, they were getting their brains beaten in a year ago. Maybe this is a year where it comes down to a kick. You know, that's a positive way of looking at it. Even if you miss that kick, you lose by two, you lose by three. Last year, they were losing by double digits. A lot of games. $26,000 and change showed up for it. Excuse me, 27,901 was the official attendance. Last year in year one under Willie, 60,934. Florida State spoke. They are pissed off. You go 37 years and you miss a bowl. You quit on the field. You can't line up. You can't run a play successfully offensively or stop anyone defensively, the fans are going to respond. 60,934 a year ago. 27,901 announced Saturday. My guess is it was less. That is a problem. Don't try to sugarcoat it. That is a problem. Florida State fans are pissed. You want to call them snobs? You want to say they're not real fans? Go ahead. You got all you want. They'll come back. They'll come back when you start winning games. That's the world we live in today. Florida State will take the field this fall. There's only one team that they will face who is better than them. That is Clemson. Florida State has as much talent as any other team that they will face. Are they going to be able to execute? Are they going to be coachable? Has the culture changed? I saw a lot of laughing, a lot of smiling. Honestly, it pissed me off. They were 5-7. Screw your smiling. Win some freaking games. And I don't want to hear, oh, it's March. It matters to me. Stop drafting teams. Stop bringing back the old bald and gray for flag football at halftime. Coach, prepare, practice, eat, sleep, nutrition, and win some games. Return to Florida State football. 27,000 fans showed up for this game, compared to 60,000 a year ago. That's where this program is at right now. Crumbling into the sea. Steely Dan wrote about it. He wrote about it in My Old School, where he said, I'm never going back to my old school. Look at the Florida State freaking alumni who said the same damn thing this past week. Now, I'm one of them. Not going back to my old school. Not when you put together a crap product like you put together a year ago. Will they change it? Well, let's hope. Let's smile. Let's hope. Coming up next, the Masters. It's one of the great weeks of the year. I'll break it down as we go into the night with Rick Ballew.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Love making music right here. Patty Reed's down about 12 pounds. We saw him at the Players. Last year's champ. That's four straight. Winning it for the first time. Seven out of the last eight. First time winners. Only Bubba Watson, who did it in 14 as well as 12. The only golfer to do it for a second time. I think many believe this will be a year in which that pattern will continue. Dustin Johnson, number one in the world, recently surrendered that. As a matter of fact, just did to Justin Rose. But the best for Johnson in his career is a fourth place in eight Masters. What about Justin Rose? This is like Lee Trevino, for crying out loud. What does he have? 11 top 20s, 5 top 10s, a runner-up in 2015, a runner-up in 2017. Justin Rose won it for the first time, beginning on Thursday. John Rahm, the Spaniard, had the Sunday meltdown here at the Players. I mean, really, really, really bad for John Rahm. Fourth place a year ago, and, you know, he shot a 75 going out on Thursday. Really played phenomenal golf Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So we'll see what happens with John Rahm. He'll be in the same threesome with Tiger Woods and Hao Tong Li as he gets ready for his second Masters. For Tiger, 32nd place a year ago. You know, for him, it's about putting. He has been absolutely terrible. I mean, from 10 feet in this year, he's 146th overall putting. And we're talking about the great Tiger Woods. You know, there's so much that we remember about Tiger over the years. To me, he's one of the greatest iron players that we have ever seen. But how many clutch putts did this man make when he was winning all of those tournaments and when he was winning those 14 majors? You knew 10 feet or in, Tiger was going to make those putts. He got a little bit better here at the Players with the flat stick, but even when he bounced himself out of match play a couple of weeks ago, he lost by missing a four-footer. Apparently, Tiger spent several hours yesterday after the rain, all his work on 100 yards and in, including putting. And that's how you're going to win and lose this year's tournament. As a matter of fact, Tiger Woods, I did a lot of research on this earlier today. Tiger Woods, during his four Masters championships, his four victories, okay, two of the four, he was actually outside of the top 20 in overall punting. His best score ever was eighth in his third green jacket. So the normal cliche is the tournament will be won or lost when it comes down to putting. Tiger Woods has won this tournament based on greens and regulation. When he won it in 97, 01, and 02, he was either the leader or tied as the leader in greens and regulation. That is phenomenal, because even Tiger during his heyday, even when he was the greatest of perhaps we've ever seen, and I should be fined for that after my Mike Trout commentary of a couple of weeks ago. But I don't feel bad about Tiger and great. So scratch that. I shouldn't be fined for it. I don't even need a mulligan for that. That's true. And he was second in 05 when he won his last green jacket there. Greens and regulation. But the point I was trying to make is Tiger's been off the tee in all sorts of different places. His recovery is incredible. So I expect Tiger again to struggle at times off the tee. Will he be able to make great recovery shots? We'll measure his putts and see where he's at after his first round on Thursday. But I think it's very important, and history tells us, that it doesn't necessarily come down to putting for Tiger Woods. Instead, it comes down to greens and regulation. You know, his caddy, Joe LaCava, I've never seen this with Stevie Williams. I never saw it with Fluff, his two prior caddies. Seems like he's using LaCava more than he has ever used another caddy when it comes to reading his putts. I can't read a green for the life of me. I close my eyes and guess. These golfers are so incredible at being able to do that. As good as you are as a golfer, I'm talking to you, the general public, do you struggle to read greens? Never really heard eyes come into play in golf. I'm sure it's a huge factor. Just never really heard it. I've heard it in baseball. I don't hear about it in the NBA. I don't hear about it in the NHL. I don't hear about it in the NFL. I honestly don't hear about it much in golf. Maybe you do. I read a lot on the PGA Tour. Whether it's LASIK, whether it's contacts, whatever it is. Those great glasses that Rocco Mediate used to use. I don't know. But he seems to be using his caddy more now than he ever has. I wonder if that's a message. I mean, all the years that Tiger has lined up for these putts, and, you know, Fluff and Stevie Williams certainly helped out, but Tiger was in that zone. It was Tiger that was lining it up, and Tiger had that putt down. This year he's been using more of someone else, using more of his caddy. Rory McIlroy, the opportunity to win a Grand Slam. His best finish was fourth in 2015. Last year he posted a 74. He was fifth a year ago. He let it get away on that final Sunday. Rory playing incredible golf. Was very confident today. Watched his entire presser. Could this be the infamous, not infamous, but could this be the obligatory, who is the best player on the PGA Tour to never have won a major? Could they finally win it at Augusta? That or Matt Kuchar? What is this going to be like? His 17th, 18th, 19th Masters? He's never won. He's had four top tens in his past seven appearances. Okay? His year has been kind of really marred with controversy, that whole ridiculous situation in Mexico with the caddy. And then what about recently during match play where he wouldn't give that six-inch putt to Sergio? I mean, come on. How Bush League was that? Sergio tried to knock it down left-handed and missed it, and he said he didn't concede it? Ooh. I mean, that's... this has almost become humorous with Matt Kuchar. He's pretty consistent, though. He's a moneymaker. We know that. Ricky Fowler. One here at the Players. You know how many PGA Tour victories Ricky Fowler has? Five. He won this year at the Phoenix Open. People call Bryce Harper the most overrated player in Major League Baseball. Ricky Fowler is, without any question, the most overrated golfer on the PGA Tour. Here's the problem. There isn't one. Everyone loves him. Players love him. Members of the PGA Tour love him. Everyone who travels with him loves him. Advertisers love him. The gallery loves him. The patrons at Augusta love him. The women love him. The kids love him. Dude hasn't won a major. He's won five events on the PGA Tour. He's 30. Not 22 anymore. He's 30. He'll be 31 in November. I mean, think about that for a moment. Great player, great kid. Great for the game. I just used great three times. That's Ricky. Everyone loves Ricky. Is he going to win it this year? I'd say no. You know, that's just my look at it. The guy does not win majors. There's really no other way to say it. And winning a major is obviously incredibly difficult. Well, Ricky fell apart. When was it? A couple of years back, he really fell apart. Patrick Reed just beat him last year. That was a great tournament. And Patrick Reed went out and won that. Kind of like Rory went out and won the Players' Championship this year. Ricky Fowler, you know, second place finish a year ago. What about Jason Day? First three Masters, he had a second place finish and a third place finish. He's really struggled since. And he's kind of like Jordan Spieth, where he's become a little bit of a mystery as to where are they with their game. Jordan Spieth, oh, by the way, you know, really got his career on track when he won in Augusta at the age of, what, 21? And he's put together some decent finishes as of late. But his game has really gotten away from him as of late. It's going to be a lot of fun. Love it. Hopefully you do as well. We'll make our picks tomorrow night. How did we make out? Neither of us pick Rory this year. Can you imagine that? How embarrassing is that, LeVay? My gosh.
I came pretty close to Fleetwood, but... Right. Not too hot on Sunday.
Now, you had Tommy Fleetwood. That wasn't a bad pick. I don't know. 87 golfers. You know, you got some guys that are out there that have no chance. Of course, they do it the right way. They bring back Masters champions. I mean, Ian Woosman is not going to win it. Mike Weir hits the ball about as far off the tee as Dustin Pedroia does when he's fed a 95-mile-an-hour fastball over the heart of the plate. Vijay Singh, Charles Schwartzel, Jose Maria Olazabal, Larry Mize will still be in it. Sandy Lyle will still be in it. You know, Danny Willett, I guess you could say, has a chance, but, I mean, come on. That's not going to happen. See, you know, you cut it down right there, and you look at golfers like that, and you say there's just absolutely no way. But then you look for that long shot. And you got other guys that are very long in the tooth. Bernard Langer's not going to win it. Freddie Couples is not going to win it. Now, could Jimmy Walker surprise us? Could Gary Woodland surprise us? Could Patrick Cantlay surprise us? Tyrell Hatton, I remember we talked with him recently out there, surprise us. I talked about how Tong Lee, who's going to play with Tiger Woods on Thursday and Friday. Brendan Grace. I mean, there's always Charlie Hoffman. Look at what he did a week ago. He's down some weight. And I didn't even mention Brooks Koepka. Brooks Koepka's only won, what is it, four or five tournaments on the PGA Tour, but three of those are majors. It's really scary. This is such a hard tournament to predict. I really believe that this is all about experience. The rain has been apparently a problem there, that these greens are not going to be as fast, are not going to be the slickest greens in the world, the way that the Masters is supposed to be. They're getting pelted with rain. So things are going to be a little bit soft. I was looking at their scores a year ago. I mean, 15 under won the Masters. I was a little bit down about this year's Players' Championship, especially when they went to the Snake Pit in Valspar and you only had a couple of golfers in red figures. All right, there you have it. Just a quick look. This year's Masters is going to be a blast. It always is. Congratulations. They finally got it right, and they have for the last several years, giving us much more of an opportunity to watch it on television, especially at the Golf Channel. I'm not even sure when it's going to be on. I haven't looked, but, they've done a much better job with that, as I mentioned last night. That used to be just awful. Oh, they wouldn't allow us to watch this. I mean, it's golf, crying out loud. Put it out there. You know, some will still say it's a fringe sport, which I do not agree with, but at least put it on TV so we can see it. And I know there will be people here in town that will be cutting out of work early Thursday and Friday to watch the 83rd edition of the Masters. Coming up next, we'll give you some news and notes, truth teller style. This just in from Los Angeles. Magic. Say it ain't so. That's coming up. Truth teller news and notes.
Into the Night with Rick Ballew on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
All right, Magic Johnson is stepping down as the president of the Los Angeles Lakers. It has been a nightmare in L.A., and everything has gone wrong. Magic's quote was, "I want to have fun again." So there you go. Remember, he came in, he cleaned house, got rid of Mitch Kupchak. Removed, who was it, Jim Buss at the time. And there had been talk, I read earlier today before the show, that it's been a couple of weeks since he has had a conversation with Luke Walton. All the speculation that he is out. But now it is Magic Johnson announcing. He's only 59. God, just because of everything he's been through, I mean, it seems like he's 80. It's just been a life that has been, you know, up and down, roller coaster, this and that, this and that. But he's no longer the president of the Los Angeles Lakers. Magic Johnson has announced that he is resigning as president of L.A. Let's get the news and notes. Truth Teller style, brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com. Injury, or if unfortunately, even if it was fatal and it happened on the road by a tractor trailer, a truck, an RV, a bus, take down TruckCrashLaw.com. Outstanding people there for you if something like this unfortunately did take place. This is their specialty. This is what they do. And they're the only law firm in the state of Florida where this is their expertise and this is what they do. No middlemen, no go see a lawyer and then they'll appoint it. No, go to the only law firm where this is what they do. And they're based here in Jacksonville, but again, the only one in the state of Florida. All right, a final from God's country. Florida 3, Florida State 1. Wow. I believe this is 11 straight now for Florida over Mike Martin in Florida State. And I don't even know what else to say. So I'm just going to move on. Honestly, I don't even know what else to say. I mean, how a program can lose 11 straight to a rival is just, I was reading this earlier. He was, a couple of years back, Martin was 76 and 66 lifetime against the Gators. He's now 76 and 77. Florida 3, Florida State 1. Let me get a Chris Davis update. Have you been following this story at all? Have you, LeVay?
No, I haven't.
0 for 47, Chris Davis. All right, if you go back to last season and this season, he hit 168 a year ago. Coming into play tonight, Chris Davis is 0 for his last 47. Let's see, we got a 10-2 ball game in the ninth tonight. A's against the Orioles, and Davis is not even in the lineup tonight. So he's going to hang on to this. Dan Duquette is a buddy of mine. He's the former general manager of the Orioles. He was before that a general manager of the Red Sox, and he lived in my hometown. I always really liked Dan Duquette, but he made a huge mistake here. He's in year 4 of a 7-year, $161 million contract. That is Chris Davis. $161 million. He's making $23 million this year in Baltimore. And he hasn't had a hit all year. Again, he is 0-4-47. Just out of this world. Lenny Dykstra in the news. He's suing Ron Darling. Darling has come out with a book. I think it's 108 Stitches is the name of it. Apparently, Darling goes off on Dykstra, calling him a racist. Going back to the World Series in 86, saying that Darling had all of these incredibly harming words to say about oil can Boyd when he was on the Hill. It's in Darling's book. Dykstra denies this, says Daryl Strawberry, Doc Gooden, Keith Mitchell, among others, can back him that he never said it. So Dykstra is suing Ron Darling for defamation. Pretty interesting to see what happens with this. I mean, we're going back 30 years when these two played with one another. Len Dykstra is an absolute train wreck, although he's one of my favorite guests on the Howard Stern Show. His conversations with Robin are legendary. But he is a mess. And yeah, I would think in libel and defamation that character is a big play in something like this. I don't even know what to predict outside of just telling you that, why would Ron Darling write about something like that? I just never really looked at Ron Darling as that way. I mean, Darling's got a good gig. He's a broadcaster now. We hear from him. You know, he's not really that opinionated. It's a lot of play. He's certainly not John Smoltz. He's the very best at what he does. I just think Ron Darling's pretty good. But these, you know, tell-all books, aren't they really for the people who need the cash? Aren't they for, like, the Jose Canseco's of the world not the Ron Darlings. Almost disappointed that he took that route. UCLA hires Mark Cronin, got him out of Cincinnati. And finally today, we started with the Jags. Let's wrap with them as well. They did announce, or it was discovered a little bit earlier today, that Irv Smith, the tight end out of Alabama, is in fact visiting. You know, a lot of people want to see him get the tight end out of Iowa, Hockenson, in the first round. I would love that, but I mean, as we get closer to draft day, there's more and more of a feeling that they're going to go with the best defensive lineman available. Maybe Irv Smith is a guy they can get with that 38th pick. That would be very early in the second round if he is not snatched up before then. We shall see. There you go. Truth Teller News and Notes brought to you by TruckCrashLaw.com. They're the only law firm in the state of Florida where this is what they're able to do for you. And if anyone in the, within your family or a friend has been injured, even if it was fatal, okay, and it happened out on the road from a truck, a tractor trailer, RV, a bus, anything like that, goes straight to the only law firm, and they're based in Jacksonville. They're the only one here in the state where this is what they do. This is their expertise. They're great people. So go ahead and contact them. Go to truckcrashlaw.com.
Now, the two-minute drill, delivered by Moe's Southwest Grill.
Welcome to Moe's!
Waiting in line is so 2018. App your way to the front of the line. Order Moe's online or in the app. Walk in, grab the food, and go.
All right, time for the Sports Den. James Coleman is here.
What's going on?
Hey, Rick? Man. You guys had a lot of fun last night. Good young man on here, Fred Davis. I enjoyed listening to him.
Yeah, man, it's always good to see young men get an opportunity to advance their careers. I believe athletes should get paid, but at the same time, this is what it is. It's still one of the pure things. It's still a lot of excitement. And he picked a good program. I'm going to hate having to see my guys compete against him, but I wish that young man nothing but success.
Clemson has – you look at some of the kids they've gotten out of the state of Florida in the last 10 years and what they're doing now in the NFL.
In general, not so much in the secondary that I can think, but they definitely have been a D-line factory for quite some time. And I think Dabo's done a good job of – doing a really good balance of getting about 10 to 15 3-stars that will lay the foundation and then get in the top guys that he believes, except for this class. This class, he may have 5 or 6 commits in the top 10. I mean, they're turning away 5-star defensive ends.
It's unbelievable what they've been able to do. So, yeah, it was good to hear him last night. Get out of his way. You know, I'd be one that would kind of like those visits. You could still take them. Yeah. If you want, you know, everything is non-binding, but, you know, he may want to get through the early recruiting process and get in now in December.
That and then what Dabo's doing and a lot of other schools, I think Willie's trying to adapt this as well now, is, you know, don't commit until you're actually ready to commit. They have no problem with you taking your visits, but they have slots. And they're going after about, let's say they're going to sign 3 DBs, they're going to go after 10. Mm-hmm. And it's really the first 3 that commit are the ones that they take, and if they have room for you later, they will. Yep. They will stop recruiting you. So it's more of a jump on board now or don't, and we wish you the best.
All right, what's coming up tonight?
Tonight we'll talk – obviously we'll get heavy into the NFL draft. We'll talk about that. We'll probably get into a little bit more of spring ball since we had that, obviously, that announcement that took up a good amount of the show. We'll talk about – we'll preview Miami, Florida Springs is coming up as well, and just whatever randomness, there's a hate o'clock, which isn't really a hate o'clock. I'm just more curious about baseball culture and the way that they greet each other. It's a little interesting.
Yeah, that one deal out of Texas is
awkward handshake. It's better ways for me to greet my teammates.
Yeah, I know you. I'll save it for when you guys get into it. I think it's a manly approach, but it's an unusual approach.
Yeah. You know, a butt slap in sports, as long as you say good game, is not weird. I'd rather not have my front shake.
Yeah, that's a weird deal. So that's coming up on the Sports Den. All right, there he goes, James Coleman, along with Denny Thompson. That's going to do it for us. And, you know, I did do news and notes. Kevin Gelly did announce that he's going pro tonight as well. Mentioned that earlier in the program. For those of you who weren't around to hear that, there was a lot of, you know, activity today in the world of college basketball. The biggest story was UCLA, where obviously Cronin is leaving Cincinnati to go, but there was that whole story involved with Rick Barnes and whether or not UCLA asked permission at Tennessee to go and bring him in. Chris Mullen walked away as well today from St. John's. So a little bit more movement there in the world of college basketball. All right, that'll do it for us. Make sure you join us tomorrow night. Greg Huntington is going to be here in that first hour. They got a great event coming up with a bunch of ex-Jaguars and raising some money for a tremendous cause. That's coming up right around the corner, a big event in a couple of weekends, but it's one that I think Jag fans out there will certainly want to be a part of. So we'll do that tomorrow night with Greg Huntington and just talk with him some football as well. Obviously a huge fan and one of the 10 original Jacksonville Jaguars, so we'll do that coming up during Wednesday night show as well. Do want to thank the good folks over at Remedy for helping us bring the program on this Tuesday night. Right now, they have all sorts of jobs that are available, both full and part-time, including an order processing representative. This is for a medical company, and they need you to be of great customer service and computer skills. If you have that, it's $15 an hour in South Jacksonville and plenty of other jobs available as well. Two ways which you can reach them. Pull up the brand new app at Remedy Staff or just go online, remedystaff.com. That'll do it. Matt LeVay produces the program. My name's Rick Ballew. We're back tomorrow night and the rest of the week from 7 until 9 on 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
I've been talking to people walking here. We've been talking about next year, and I'm sitting there saying, I'm not going to be here.